It is time for the Berkshire Edge on air.
Yes. Hello.
Hello. We have Marcy with us.
And half of the Berkshire Edge. The other half is pulling into the driveway even as we speak.
Well, I was, that's good. You got the publisher.
I was treading water as much as I could there.
I know. I'm sorry. David had to bring his children to school, and one of them has a presentation to give today, and he had to take all of the posters and everything for the presentation, so it took him a little time to set them up.
Well, you see,
here he is coming right through the door.
I can remember taking my kids to school and stuff, and this was before all the computer age, so there was even more paraphernalia that you brought to.
Right. Yeah, right.
And then my poor mother, my God, I won't even go into what she had to do. All right. Well, we're going to take a look then.
Okay, well, we'll start.
He's
walking to the phone.
If you're a parent and you have to do all this stuff, our first story might help you calm down. That is the pot shops that are coming.
To
Great Barrington. So the select board, I guess, worked out the details regulating the...
Well, they're working out the details. They haven't worked them. I mean, but one of the points, I mean, they are, the select board hammered out a draft agreement that could be used for any applicant. But one of the important issues is that the businesses will be taxed. And they will be subject to a $14.95 per. I'm sorry. There's property tax, and then they're going to add an additional tax to the state sales tax, so that there will be, and they're calling it a community impact fee of an additional 3%. On quarterly gross sales,
and that has worked out nicely in other states where they've actually been able to fund quite a lot of things with community for community activities.
Well, then the other element of this, which is interesting, is that the operator of the pot shop must also make an annual $10,000 charitable donation to a nonprofit service provider based in Great Barrington. And that provider should provide health, wellness, and or substance abuse education programs.
Yeah, I think, and the money that will be around to do that will be absolutely amazing. People will be surprised when this finally gets going in the Great Barrington area. Mm. What a benefit is not only to the state coffers, but also to the local coffers and local charities, because people are out there smoking it now anyway. It's not like you're adding a vice. People are out there doing this anyway.
Right.
And so this, instead of going to illegal people and have a great deal of the money go back into the community.
Well, that's always been the issue for decriminalizing marijuana and even heroin. That David's here. David.
Hello.
Good morning, David's. Back.
No, I'm just listening. It's an interesting discussion.
Well, I'll tell you what. We've got a gift certificate for you for one of the shops when they open up, so for mornings like this. so you can calm down a little bit after you're back in a safe place.
Yeah. You know, the only thing that I am concerned about in all of this is the driving. You know, that I think that, I mean, and this was an issue raised in Colorado as well when they first legalized pot, is whether it will affect people's driving. Otherwise, I mean, I agree with you completely, and that it's, people are getting it, and they get access to it, and who knows what the quality is, and who knows what can be laced into it. You know, I think it will be very openly smoked now, which, you know, will also take it out of the shadows.
And the driving thing, it will be a much harsher look at that than it is in the beginning with alcohol. I mean, mm-hmm. people mm-hmm. are going to have to regulate themselves unless they're also going to get in big, big, big trouble.
Right.
You'll have to regulate yourself like you do with alcohol to make sure that you don't drive when you're stoned.
Right.
It's just a point of
right. That's right.
You know, it's one of those things. That's certain people, of course, they're going to be flagrant. They're going to violate that like they do with alcohol.
But they probably are already.
But yeah, that's exactly right. That's exactly right. So it's
might
gonna
even improve somebody's drive, some people's driving. You know?
Make them better vision
well,
at night.
It will make people in Great Barrington much calmer with the parking problems.
Right.
All right. I want to go on to the second story because we have a very active Rotary Club down here. And they do just amazing things in the community. And you have the announcement of a Rotary Club Citizen of the Year up there.
Oh, yes. And she's quite amazing. And
yeah, she started this program called Charlie's Fund because her son Charlie has muscular dystrophy and Duchenne's. And so she and her husband Benji have just been adamant about and driven to find a cure for this and to fund research into it, and she's raised an amazing amount of money.
$36 million
dollars. Yeah, she and her husband, they live in Egremont, and I've known them, actually I've known Charlie since he was a little kid. He's the same age as my kids, and used to go to Sinai Academy, so I've known him for most of his life, and it's just really a terrific effort, and it shows, you know, what one person can do. I mean, she's just amazing.
I don't know how she's done it. I mean, it's just all from. It's not all local money, obviously.
No, it's a national campaign.
Right. It's a national campaign, but it's setting up the contacts, getting people. The great thing about what she's done is getting other people also involved to be as energetic in it as she is, and keeping them energetic. That's something. You can raise funds for things, but then to raise funds and keep growing and keep the funds working, it takes a very special person to assemble people that can do that on a volunteer basis.
Right.
Congratulations to Tracy.
That's an amazing story, and congratulations.
It is.
Now, this next story is something that I just heard and just read statistics that with the unemployment rate so low, there are jobs out there, and this has been the case now for years. There are plenty of jobs out there, but it's difficult to find part-time help, and that's amazing to me.
It is amazing.
You know, there's a company up in Ankrum looking for part-time help in the summer for students. They're still looking for people to fill in. $18 an hour is what they're offering.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
Huh. Maybe I'll take it.
I was going to say, all of us in the media would take that in a heartbeat.
Right. Yeah. Wow.
Yeah, just it was an interesting look at, you know, our reporter, Terry Cowgill, just looked at this at this issue, which is, you know, you wouldn't assume that part-time help would be a real problem, but it is. It's really an interesting story, frankly.
And there's not much employers. People will say, well, that maybe they should offer health benefits. And there's people that just don't want to work it. There's people out there to work these jobs.
Yeah, well, you know, one of the things about kids, I mean, there are a couple of issues, is that the summer season here is longer than the school vacations.
Mm-hmm.
You know, kids now go back to school earlier. They get out earlier, but they go back to school earlier, and many colleges are starting up before Labor Day. So that, you know, one of the problems is that these college kids can't commit to being there for the full season.
Right.
So that's one issue. And the other thing is that, you know, they are doing, especially high school kids, you know, there's tremendous pressure for them to have something much more interesting and distinctive on their college resumes than waiting tables. And so they're all looking for internships or something that will distinguish themselves. And so it makes these summer jobs less attractive. But otherwise, I don't know what the issue is. Maybe, and also there are just fewer kids around here. I know the camps in the Berkshires have always recruited from Europe. We have a contractor who's doing some work for us, and He came here first. He's Polish, and he came to the United States first because he was he came to work at the Eisner camp, which is in Great Barrington, and he and his wife came, and then they stayed. So, you know, there's some discussion about having to try to get teenagers to come from Europe, of course, if the Trump administration will let them in.
Yeah, it's interesting because the Interlaken for years and years and years has brought in workers and housed them at the facilities at the Interlaken, so they had the proper help they needed to get through the seasons.
So it's it's going to be very difficult if Great Barrington risks getting a bad reputation for service.
Yep.
It's bad enough as it is, but it could get worse. And then, of course, there are, there's a lot of nastiness in our comments too. I mean, there was somebody who said, "Well, who wants to work waiting on those New Yorkers who are so pushy and obnoxious?" And somebody else wrote, "I think it's demeaning to wait on people." So the comments have been very interesting, and of course there have been plenty of people who have, retorted.
I will never accept those comments. When I was in between radio jobs a couple of times, I worked third shift, overnight shift, assembling Timex watches to make money so I could feed my family and live a life. I mean, so. If you need to make money, no job should be beneath you.
Well, no job is demeaning. Yeah. Work is honorable.
Yeah.
And, there are people who grumble about everything.
I'm slowly becoming one of those because as I get older, but I try not to grumble as much as I might want to.
People do grumble. I remember I once had a little talk with myself at some point in my career, and when I realized that if I am constantly complaining about my job, then it's a bad reflection on me, not on the job. If I can't do better than be stuck in a job that I'm complaining about all the time, then what does it say about me?
That's it.
I stopped grumbling.
All right. Well,
a new job.
We will move on to the next story.
Right.
Which is an interesting story about Kate McCormick.
Mm. Oh, yeah. That's Kate McCormick is in a law firm with her father, or was. Her father was rather well-known in town. He was a town moderator, and he was assistant fire chief. And he was also apparently forced out of being a lawyer by some circumstances in which he had allegedly mishandled some client's trusts. And so he was he resigned after receiving a letter from the Bar Association. And Kate McCormick, his daughter, who is in partners with him in their law firm, continued, but she also decided that she'd run for Register of Deeds, which is
a full-time job,
state job, that the Registrar of Deeds, there's three in the county, one in North County, in Central, Pittsfield, and in Great Barrington, and she was after the Great Barrington job. People questioned whether or not, how could she be a lawyer and also do this full-time job, and she decided that she'd prefer to be a lawyer. But it was rather scandalous circumstances under which this decision both to run for the job and to bail out occurred. So this is a continuing story that we will be following. The saga of her father, Ed McCormick, is really quite interesting, and we'll be doing something quite long on that at some point in the not-too-distant future.
All right. Now, the next story, I'm sorry, gets me a little upset. Back in grammar school, one of my nicknames was Tubby the Tuba.
Really?
I've always had a problem with weight. And so I look at this next story and I said, oh, it's about classical music. And I looked down and I said, there's Tubby the Tuba.
Oh, I liked Tubby the Tuba before, but no one ever called me.
So let's get into this, because actually this is kind of a cute story.
Well, it is a cute story. It's a kind of an education story that our music reviewer, Eli Neuberger, who does our classical music coverage at Tanglewood and also dance at Jacob's Pillow, and his wife, Carolyn, who is a great artist, and she sketches, she does sketches for the illustrations for his reviews. He's a physician from Boston, but he also plays the tuba. In fact, he's played the tuba in Seiji Ozawa Hall. He's, I mean, a professional musician as well. And so they have been encouraged with the in association with the Berkshire Music School in Pittsfield. They've been going around to various elementary schools and performing this lovely piece about the different parts of the orchestra. The tuba being one of them, and so we have a cute little story about introducing music to elementary classical music to elementary students, and it's with by the way a video of their performance, which is included. So,
and she plays the washboard.
Oh, yeah. By the way, Carolyn, yeah, also is in the group. She plays the washboard.
Now, for people that are listening,
she's very good at it,
and she's good.
For people that are listening to that, to this right now, all the stories we're talking about, they can go to our once this show is done, they can go to our on demand page, under the Berkshire Edge Live on Air, and there's links to all these stories, these particular stories, by the way.
Okay.
But you can also, of course, theberkshireedge.com is the place to go. For all these stories and many, many, many,
everything in life, you can go there.
That's right.
Basic. Well, basically.
And I just have a quick interjection, very, very brief. Did you ever want to play the tuba, Marshall?
Here's the joke: is yes, I did. But
I'm
when
sure.
I
you did?
First, when I
sure.
went to, when I went to in grammar school, Phil Garavoy was our music teacher. The first two instruments I tried. One was a tuba, and I said, "To hell with this! It's bigger than I am," and I didn't play it. Then I'd pick up the saxophone. And I didn't like the saxophone because of the taste of the reed. So finally, Mr. Garavoy handed me a guitar and said, here, try this. And I loved the guitar, and I learned to play the guitar from Mr. Garavoy.
And you've been playing it ever since?
I haven't played it in a while, but I can pick it up, and I can play Eve of Destruction and sing it with no problem.
Well, my father always wanted me to learn to play the tuba, and it was not because he had any love of music or the tuba. But he was a consummate entrepreneur, and he figured if you play the tuba, all you have to do is play two notes, oompa, oompa.
That's right.
Very easy to learn, and you can always get a job.
Well, Tubby the tuba puts the lie to that idea.
Yeah, well, he didn't know.
That's right. All right. Well, we will move on from Tubby the tuba to the Berkshire International Film Festival.
Yes.
Well, which is concluded last weekend, but we have a number of reports from the film festival, and one of the interesting ones that I cited, I mean, was gone in an instant, which is about the bonuses that this was a documentary about the bonuses that professional athletes in football receive. Often they're just out of college, and it's quite a lot of money, and they manage to squander it, or it's they're following the advice of people who are taking advantage of them, and it's a startling documentary, and I thought it was an interesting review of a situation in professional sports, where some kids are. Our young men are being, and women are being abused in a way by their advisors. But anyway, that's one of the many films that were in the Berkshire Film Festival.
Well, we're all in the same basic age group and a sort of pattern. I can remember the great thing about all these film festivals and the ones that stick around to become successful. Documentary films now are not just for a select few like they used to
be.
No,
they're not.
They're now open to the general public because there's film festivals like this, and then they get on Netflix, Amazon Prime. They're available to people not only in the movie theaters, but this way. And it's amazing how many people now are exposed to the great things that come out of these film festivals.
Yeah.
Yeah. And well, and, you know, documentaries, they tell great stories.
Yep.
Yeah.
These poor filmmakers work on them for years.
All right. Well, speaking about great stories, we have about a minute and a half left, and we can talk about your glossy magazine.
Yes.
Can you believe?
We have this magazine, and it is being distributed in Connecticut.
Should we admit that we're in print? I mean, you know.
Oh, yeah.
Well, we are in print, and we have a beautiful new magazine. It's called BerkshiresCalendar.com, and it's being distributed to, I'm just looking to see if I can see where it is in Connecticut, but we are distributing it in Connecticut, and just one sec, let me, but it is a companion to our online calendar. It is not a list of dates. Because those, you know, dates are not a list of events because they you know, something like that becomes outdated very quickly, and our calendar is updated daily. So here we are. We're here in Connecticut. We have them at Salisbury Town Hall, Salisbury Garden Center, Elise Harney Real Estate, Noble Horizons. That's in Salisbury Lake. We have Lakeville Town Grove Beach, Wake Robin Inn, Gear Village, Canaan YMCA. So it's being the Tri-Arts Theater in Sharon, Sharon Hospital, Rock Hill Inn in Colebrook, Sharon Country Inn, Norfolk Corner Store. So it is.
It's available.
It's available. Oh, there are more places.
Yeah,
the Inn at Iron Mass, Interlochen Inn, the Boathouse. Millerton, New York Library, Norfolk Chamber Music. Anyway, so it's around. It's called BerkshiresCalendar.com, and it is really quite beautiful, and it's an overview of things to do. It's not the events themselves. It's an overview of things to do, because if you see something you like, you go to BerkshiresCalendar.com, which is the alternate URL for our online calendar, and you can find everything that you would like to do.
All right.
Searchable by date, town, category, and venue.
All right. And that, my friends, wraps up this edition
of
Fridge On Air. We will speak to you both next week.
Okay.
All right.
All right. Thank you very much.
You bet. Bye-bye.
That is the Berkshire Edge On Air, and, of course, theberkshireedge.com on the web.